Mark, be turning your Bibles to the book of Ruth. The book of Ruth. It's good to have you all here this evening. Hope you've had a productive afternoon, maybe a little bit of rest. About 2 months shy of 3 years ago, we moved in this building. And some of you were here at that time. We had our first service here, and the number that I was given was 73, was the first meeting that we had in this building. We had a number of visitors from the community. We had visitors from other congregations. The second week, we had kind of a homecoming, and we had several people speak. We had Brother Owen speak. We had Brother J.D. speak. We had Brother Paul Krennick, whose father was the first treasurer here. And the second Sunday we were here, we had a packed house, and it was very exciting. And the number that I wrote down for that packed house was 84. So 2 years and 10 months later, we hit 84 in a regular service. And it was pretty full this morning, wasn't it? We had 81 a couple of weeks ago. The 2 weeks in between, we had 16 to 17 people sick, just a long list of sick people. But we had a good crowd this morning, and we had a number of visitors from the community. And I will tell you that that is your work, and that's what you're doing, inviting your neighbors and friends and people that live around you and kin folks. And so almost every service now, we have four or five, six people that are not going to church anywhere, or they're going someplace else, and you're telling them about this work, and they're coming. And in many cases, after the second time they come, I give them a phone call about Monday morning, and I say, can I get with you and have a cup of coffee or a Coke? And on a pretty regular basis, they say, yeah, come on. And so I've been blessed to have a chance to meet some people and get to know them, several of which you haven't met yet, but I hope that you will in time. So keep up the work. I wonder what Scott will say about this next week when he comes. He talks about this a lot more than I do. The book of Ruth is a tremendous book, and I would tell you it is a book that if you had a teenage child or a young person, a college-age child, and you say, hold on just a minute here. I'd like for you to see what I have. Well, we are locked up here. So maybe you're going to see my notes tonight, and maybe you're not. Technology is wonderful when it works. What happens is it works most of the time, and so we get quite used to it. And then all of a sudden, one time it doesn't work, and you think, what just happened? We were visiting with an old friend of ours, John Champagne, because the TV is going out. The pixels on it are going out. And I'm not happy about getting a new TV. And when he said, oh, we can fix that, I almost gave him a hug. If I don't have to learn anything new and I can use the same remote, I'm a happy camper. All right, let's see now if we can get back to where I want to be. Good. Good plan. Now back to what I was saying. If you had a teenage child or a college-age child or a young person, 20 years old, 25 years of age, and you were going to sit down with them and you were going to teach them what it means to have a good reputation, to have good work ethic, when you start teaching them about the fact that doors get open to you or doors get closed to you, that you don't have a clue that they actually happened. All you know is, hey, I got this job. You don't know that a half a dozen people told that company or told that boss about you while you were applying. All of a sudden, you met the right person for your life, and you don't really have a clue what did or did not happen around you. So I would say to you, based on how you live your life, based on your reputation, based on your work ethic, you begin building a reputation from the time you're probably 8 or 10 years of age. By the time you're 16, 18, 20 years of age, your reputation is pretty much fixed. If it's good, there will be doors opened for you that in many cases you'll never know or you won't know for a long time were open to you. There will be, if your reputation is not good, there are doors closed to you and you don't know they're closed. All you know is, man, I have such bad luck. I have so many people that I'm trying to get a job from. I'm trying to get a place to stay. I'm trying to do this and trying to do, and you have no clue that there are doors closed to you all around because of your reputation. In the book of Ruth, you see a young lady that has a terrible misfortune. She becomes widowed at a very early age. She has no money. She has no friends except for one. And I want you to see how she turns out in her life. In chapter 1, in verse 1, it came about in the days when the judges governed that a famine was in the land, and a certain man from Bethlehem of Judah went to sojourn in the land of Moab with his wife and his two sons. And his name was Elimelech, and the name of his wife was Naomi, and the name of the two sons were Mahlon and Chilion, Ephraimites of Bethlehem, and they entered the land of Moab and remained there. Two things I want to tell you about that. So when you're looking at how the English Bible was put together, what you see is very much like a library. When you go into it, you have fiction books and nonfiction books, and you have biographies and autobiographies, and then they all are part of a number, what's called a Dewey number system, all the way back to a gentleman named Dewey. You have the same thing in the Old Testament, 5, 12, 5, 5, 12. These are the books of law. The books of law start with the book of Genesis, and they go through the book of Deuteronomy. They are in our Bibles in chronological order, meaning Genesis is the oldest book, then Exodus, Numbers, Leviticus, Deuteronomy. We have 12 books of history that we are right in the middle of. So we went through these books, and then we went through the book of Joshua. So the book of Joshua is the first book of history. Why? It's the oldest. It's the oldest of the 12 history books. The second book right behind it is the book of Judges. And then we have a little book called the book of Ruth. And following after this, and Lord willing, in 2 weeks, we're going to be talking about a little boy named Samuel. I thought about doing Samuel tonight, but the more I thought about the story of Ruth, the more I decided we're going to take time and look at this. So we are early in the period of time of the books of history. Here's the second thing I want to tell you. Moses lived from about 1550 to 1400 B.C. He lived to be 120 years, if you remember. This would be Moses. Then we had Joshua. Joshua was about 40 years younger than Moses. When Moses died at 120, Joshua was 80 years old. So Joshua reigned and was the leader of God's people until about 1350. The first king over here will be Saul. And King Saul became king about 1100. This period right here is the period of the judges. It's from about 1100 to 1300 years before Christ. So we studied all of these stories about Jephthah and about Gideon and about Deborah and Barak, and we talked about Shamgar, and the last major judge that we talked about was Samson a couple of weeks ago. This is a book that is put in here because chronologically it fits. It has nothing to do with the judges. It was just an inspired and great book from that time period, and that's why it occurs in the Bible where it does. Verse 3, Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left with two sons. And they took for them Moabite wives, women as wives. The name of the first one was Orpha, the name of the second or the other was Ruth, and they lived about 10 years. Moab was a son of Lot. You think about over here the story of Lot, and this is Genesis chapter 19. So when Lot and his wife and his two daughters head out of the city, and you remember his wife turned backwards, and what happened to her when she turned backwards? She turned into a pillar of salt. So who escaped was Lot and his two daughters. They lived up in the mountains for a period of time in a land, a city named Zoar, and they believed that they couldn't have children, so they eventually lay with their father, and each of them had a child. One of them's name was Moab, the second was Ammon. These people were part of Abraham's land promise, and so they were sort of kind of kinfolks to the Hebrew people. This Moab, the land of Moab, is where this young lady Ruth is from. In verse 5, then both Mahlon and Chilion died, and the woman was bereft of her two children and her husband. So you have a woman here whose husband dies, and she's trying to figure out, how in the world am I going to take care of these boys? And they grow up, and they have marry girls. They're not from this land, but they marry women from here because that's where they had been living for some number of years. And then the boys die. And all you have left is these three women. You have the older woman, Naomi, and then you have these two young ladies. Now, she doesn't have any money. She doesn't have anything there. She has a piece of land back where they came from, you're going to see, because a man's going to buy that from her. So in verse 6, she arose with her daughter-in-laws. In verse 6, that she might return to the land of Moab, for she heard the land of Moab that the Lord had visited his people in giving them food. She was just trying to find a place she could make a living, that she could do something. In verse 7, she departed from the place and was there and under two daughters-in-law with her, and they went on their way and returned to the land of Judah. And Naomi said to the daughter-in-laws, go return each to your mother's house. Now, they were from Moab. I've got to go back here. I have no other choice but to go back to my kinfolk. And you don't have any kinfolk or family here. You've got to go back. And then she says to them, I'm an old woman. I can't give you any more children for sons. You need to stay here amongst your people. And one of the two said, yes, that's exactly what I'll do. There is a quote here that's a beautiful quote that oftentimes is read in wedding processionals or in a wedding sermon, where a young man or a young woman would say this to the husband. This actually was something that Ruth said to her mother-in-law. A couple of years ago, about a year and a half ago on Mother's Day, I did a story on a Mother's Day story on the story of Ruth and Naomi. But Ruth wasn't the daughter of Naomi, she was the daughter-in-law. So what you have happen is this. Verse 13, verse 12, return my daughters, go, for I am old and too old to have a husband. And I said, if I hope I should even have a husband tonight and also bear you sons, would there be any of you wait till they were grown? The idea being, I can't give you anything else. I can't help you make a living. I don't have any money. I can't produce another son for you. So she says, go forth. The latter part of verse 13, there's a statement that I want you to think about. The latter part of verse 13 says, for the hand of the Lord has gone forth against me. This is what Naomi said to her daughter-in-laws. Verse 20, go there for just a moment. So she says to the people, now she comes back. I'm going to read in just a moment what Ruth said. So Naomi comes back. These people haven't seen her for a while. She looks so bad, they don't recognize her. And when they look, people that knew her said, is this you, Naomi? I want you to look at what she said to them in verse 20. And she said to them, do not call me Naomi. Call me Mara, for the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me. I went out full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. Why do you call me Naomi, since the Lord has witnessed against me and the Almighty has afflicted me? Three times in this chapter. First off, she has a conversation with her daughters-in-law that the Lord had been very hard to her. When she comes back to her people, the Lord has had his hand against me. He has treated me very roughly. In verse 21 again, the Lord has witnessed against me and the Almighty has afflicted me. We talked about, and part of why I wanted to do this story is because where we are in the book of Ecclesiastes right now. This morning I talked about here you and I are, and we're living on this earth, and we can see other people on this earth, and we can see what goes on, and we can sort of develop an idea about how the world works based on what we see. If you don't have the ability to understand that there are things happening in heaven, God's never going to tell you what's happening, but just knowing in your heart that God is up here and He providentially watches over all things, and that when something is happening to you personally, you have a tendency of taking it very personally. Why did this happen to me? Why did this happen to me? What the book of Ecclesiastes is about, the chapter 3, is about providence. There is an appropriate time for everything. God makes everything beautiful in its time. You could take the story of Job. I used this morning the story of Joseph. The story of Job would work just as well, or so many others. If I have the ability to look up into heaven and see what's happening, I can see the providence of God. But when I'm going through rough times in my life, this is very hard to do. It's very hard. It's very hard to say, it seems like you're picking on me, God. It seems like all of my friends, my family, it seems like you're creating all kind of problems for me, and I don't know why. And we have a tendency of taking it personally. This woman was in that place where she believed that God had dealt with her very harshly. She said, we went out full. My husband and I and boys left, and we went to another land, and we were going to make a place for ourselves, but He brought me back empty. Now, I want you to look in chapter 2 now for just a moment. Back to chapter 1 for just a moment. In verse 16, chapter 1 and verse 16. But Ruth said, do not urge me to leave or turn back from following you, for where you go, I will go, and where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God. The Moabites were idolatrous worshipers. They didn't worship in the true and living God. Where you die, verse 17, I will die, and there I will be buried with you. Thus may the Lord do to me, and worse, if anything but death parts you and me. And when she saw that she was determined, when Naomi saw that attitude in Ruth, when she saw that she was determined to go with her, she said no more to her on the matter. In verse 22, the ending of chapter 1, Naomi returned with Ruth the Moabite, her daughter-in-law who returned from the land of Moab, and they came to Bethlehem at the beginning of barley harvest. Now, when you look at verse 19, verse 19, when people saw her come back, the question was, are you Naomi? Is that you? Have you ever seen somebody that you hadn't seen in a long time, and the next time you see them, they've lost weight, they look haggard, they look terrible, and you're thinking, I'm not even sure that's who I think that is. And you really hadn't kept up with them in their life. I would tell you, the people that knew Naomi before, who was a fairly prominent woman, her husband was quite wealthy. You're going to see Elimelech. So she came from some wealth and prominence, and she was very well known in Bethlehem, and they weren't even sure that that was her when they saw her. In chapter 2 and verse 1, you have Naomi had a kinsman of her husband, a man of great wealth of the family of Elimelech, that was her husband, whose name was Boaz. And Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, please let me go into the fields and glean from among the ears of grain after one in whose sight I may find favor. And she said to her, go, my daughter. I want to talk about gleaning for just a little bit. Gleaning has to do with when you're poor. What you see happen is this. You have a field here that they would work with oxen. And so the Lord taught them all the way back into the law of Moses, do not cut the corners of the field. Whatever the oxen can do, you do that. You leave this for the poor people. When you are loading up, you're making big stalks out of these and you're tying them together with rope. Anything that falls, you leave it there. And when you're carrying it, if something falls out of the basket, do not go back and pick it up. This was how God dealt with or helped those who were poor. It didn't matter if you had a grape vineyard or whatever you had. Gleaning is when you're poor. You have no land. You have no ability to work. This was their food stamps. And so the first thing that happens when this young lady gets back, she sees it's in harvest season. And they have no money. They have no food. She and her mother-in-law, she says, do you think I can go out and just start picking grain from the areas here, gleaning the fields? And her mother-in-law said, well, go right ahead and do that. Now, I will tell you, when you go back and study in history, I'm going to talk about when Isaac found his wife Rebekah, when Jacob found Leah. What you found was they were looking for women, and Abraham, when he sent his best helper to find a wife for his son Isaac, he was looking for work ethic. He was looking for a servant attitude. He was looking for someone that would put other people ahead of them. This young woman was that kind of woman, to be sure. So in verse 3, she departed and went and gleaned the fields after the reapers, and it happened to come to a portion of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the family of Elimelech. Now that wasn't particularly odd, because he was a very wealthy man. Probably a good portion of the fields belonged to him, but she just happens to come onto a field owned by this wealthy man. I had a conversation with an older gentleman last night, and I say this fairly often. The older I get, the less I believe in coincidence. The concept of coincidence comes from flipping a coin. Could be heads, could be tails. I can flip a coin 10 times and I might hit heads 7 times. That is a coincidence. It's the flipping of a coin. The word providence, as I talked about this morning, comes from Genesis 22. It has to do with God taking care of the world. Now, it could have been complete coincidence, but I'm going to suggest to you, based on the story, it was not coincidence that this young woman happened. The first field that she went to glean was a kinfolk of Naomi's husband, who was quite wealthy. In verse 5, Boaz said to the servant, who is in charge of the reapers and who is this young woman? So he's seeing a young woman. Imagine him walking in the fields. And what happened here, even amongst the wealthy people, there might be a barn over here. You're going to see this a little later. And the wealthy man is going to stay in this barn. He's going to watch this take place and make sure that it's done right and people are being fair to him. So he sees somebody new out there and she is working like you can't imagine. And so he's watching her gleaning these corners. And she's running behind the reapers and she's picking up whatever she could and she's running back. A little bit later it says that she worked from early day to late night and only went into the shed for a short period of time. When Boaz asked about this young woman, that's part of what he's told. Now look at this for just a moment now. In verse 6, the servant in charge of the reapers answered and said, she is the young Moabite woman who returned with Naomi from the land of Moab. And she said, please let me glean and gather after the reapers amongst the sheaves. And she came and remained from morning until now. She has been sitting in the house for a little while. All of these are interest in working, work ethic. Well, what difference does it make? Right now, she's just trying to scratch out a living. She's just trying to do whatever she can. But what's happening is she's building a reputation. She's building a reputation with the people in the field, with the people that are the reapers. She's building a reputation with a man named Boaz, who's very wealthy and prosperous. You're going to see in the next chapter, she built quite a reputation with the people in the city. A young woman who was widowed at quite a young age before she could even have a child, comes to a place where she doesn't know a living soul, but in pretty short order, she begins building a reputation that spreads. We'll come back to that in a moment. Verse 8, Boaz now says to Ruth, this is the first conversation they had. So he's learned about her, he's learned about that she came back with Naomi. He's learned about tremendous work ethic, and he's seeing it. And Boaz said to Ruth in verse 8, "Listen carefully, my daughter. Do not go out and glean another field. Don't go to somebody else's place. I'm going to take care of you, basically. Furthermore, do not go on from this one, but stay with my maids. Let your eyes be on the fields where they reap and go after them. Indeed, I have commanded the servants not to touch you. When you are thirsty, go to the water jars and drink from what the servants draw." This was the first time, maybe in this young girl's life, a door got opened to her. A door got opened. How did the door get opened? What was it that caused this to happen? Okay, well, Boaz was kin to Naomi, and so when he finds out that this that this lady was the young girl that came back, the Moabite woman that came back with her, and then her work ethic and what kind of person she was. Now, she doesn't realize it, but a door of opportunity has just been opened to her, and it was opened based on who she associated with, namely Naomi, and her work ethic. Let's look a little bit further now. In verse 10, she fell on her face, bowing to the ground to him. "Why have I found favor in your sight that I should take you should take notice of me since I'm a foreigner?" She's trying to figure out, "It looks like to me you're trying to help me. You don't know me." Boaz answered and said to her, "All that I have done for your mother-in-law after the death of your husband has been fully, all you have done has been fully reported to me." Let's stop for a moment. All that you did to your mother-in-law, I know Naomi, I know what I've seen as far as your work ethic, and it has been reported to me how you took care of your mother-in-law. That's how a door got opened. And so he says in verse 11, "All that you did for your mother-in-law after the death of your husband has been fully reported to me." I wonder who reported that. Fact is, it doesn't matter, does it? That's just how reputations are built. "And how you left your father and your mother in the land of birth and came to a people that you did not previously know. May the Lord reward your work and your wages full for the Lord God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to seek." And she says, "I have found favor in your sight, my Lord, for you have comforted me and indeed have spoken kindly to your maidservant, though I am not like one of your maidservants." His maidservants would have been Hebrew, for one thing. They probably were much more prominent, maybe more educated, because he was a quite wealthy man. "I'm not like your maidservants, and I'm so thankful that you have helped me with this door of opportunity." When we're young, coming up, I don't think any one of us really grasp how hard it is to get a good reputation and how easy it is to lose it. And when you get a good reputation, sometimes you realize that people are opening doors for you. Sometimes you do not realize it. But it is part of the providence of God. It is how God works. Boaz helped this woman. She figured it out pretty quick that he had decided to help her. "Well, why are you helping me? I heard from people how you took care of Naomi. You didn't have to do that. You could have stayed back with your people and you could have found a husband back there someplace." No doubt that she was an attractive young lady. In verse 14, Boaz sits next to her at mealtime and said, "Come here and eat of the bread and dip in your piece of bread in the vinegar." And she sat beside the reapers and he served her roasted grain. And she ate and was satisfied and had some left. And when she arose to glean, Boaz commanded his servant, saying, "Let her glean even amongst the sheaves." Don't make her just dig out of the corners here. If she wants some of the good stuff that has been harvested, you just let her have it. Now, more and more doors are being opened to her. In verse 16, "And you also shall purposely pull out some of the grain from the bundles and leave it that she may glean, and do not rebuke her. You leave it alone, let it fall, let it drop. You're not wrapping it up with a rope here. You let it fall. If she wants to come get it, you don't say a word about it. You just let her have it." In verse 18, she took it up and went to the city with her mother-in-law, what she had gleaned. Well, it was tremendously more than what you could have just done from gleaning. In verse 19, her mother-in-law said, "Where then did you glean today and where did you work? May he who took notice of you be blessed." She didn't know who it was, but somebody had to have helped her. She could not have brought back the amount of food for their meal from the measly gleaning. And so she knew, Naomi knew, somebody had helped her. Taking a look now in verse 20, chapter 2 and verse 20, Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, "May he be blessed of the Lord who has not withdrawn his kindness to the living and the dead." And Naomi said, "This man, our relative, or this man's name, and this man, our relative, and he is one of our closest relatives." When she said Boaz, Naomi said, "You're kidding me. Boaz is my kinfolk. He's one of my closest kinfolk." And now what happens is a whole series of other things that happen. This is providential care of a widow woman, an older widow woman, and a younger widow woman in living color that you're seeing before you. Was it coincidental or providential that the first place she went to was not someone that was going to take advantage of her or try to molest her or harm her? More than likely, it was God taking care of her. And you will see why I mean this in just a while. In verse 21, Ruth said to the Moabites, "Furthermore, he said to me, 'You shall stay close to my servants until you have finished all the harvest.'" And Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, "It is good, my daughter, that you go out with the maids, lest others fall upon you in the field." That's what Boaz was concerned about. So she stayed close by the maids of Boaz in order to glean the fields. And that's what happened sometime later. Doors of opportunity opened. I want you to look now in chapter 3. Old Testament law, and I'm going to bring you to something, a conversation that Jesus had to make this point. You remember when Jewish lawyers were testing Jesus, and they said, "We've got a question. A man is married to a woman, and he dies, and his brother is required by law to take her as wife." Yes, that's right. That's what we're coming to. And then he dies, and then the third one marries her, and he dies, and then the fourth one, so she's like a black widow. All of a sudden, she's had seven brothers, and they all died. So here was the question, because these were the Sadducees who did not believe in the resurrection. And they say, she's had seven husbands in this life. Whose will she be in the resurrection? That's where Jesus said another time, "Have you not read?" And what he tells them is, in the resurrection, there's no marriage. The purpose of marriage is for procreation, for having babies. Why do we have babies? We have babies because people die. It is to help continue to fill the world. In a place like heaven where there are no deaths, there's no need for births. But the point I'm coming to is, if someone's husband died, it was incumbent on the next of kin, the closest of kin, to take that person as their wife and to take care of them. Now, Naomi doesn't know whether or not Boaz is her closest relative, but she knows he's very close. He may very well be the brother or the son of her husband, her former husband. So Naomi has a plan. He's an old man and he gets cold at night. I remember that. And so he's going to come into the barn here at nighttime and he's going to lay down. And what you need to do is you wait for him to lay down when he finishes eating and he goes to sleep, and you come lay on his feet and you cover him up and you keep him warm. And that's exactly what this young lady did. And then in the middle of the night, he wakes up and he realizes that there's a young woman at his feet. And they have this conversation in chapter 3. So in chapter 3 and verse 4. "And when he lies down," this is what Naomi's telling Ruth, "that you shall notice the place where he lies down, and you shall go in and uncover his feet. And when he lies down, and tell him, you should, and he will tell you that you shall what you shall do." And she said to her, "All that you say I will do." In verse 7, Boaz had eaten and drunk, and his heart was merry. He went to lie down at the end of the heap of grain, and she came secretly and uncovered his feet and laid down. And it happened in the middle of the night that the woman who was startled, the man was startled and bent forward, and behold, the woman was lying on his feet. So he wakes up in the middle of the night. In verse 9, he says, "Who are you?" Now, he knew her. He'd had a conversation before, but this is the middle of the night. He's old. It's dark. "Who are you?" Verse 9. And she said, "I am Ruth, your maid. So spread your covering over your maid, for you are a close relative." Now, that meant something. It meant something, meaning you may be someone that we need to be in contact with. In verse 10, he said, "May you be blessed of the Lord, my daughter. You have shown your last kindness to be better than your first by not going after a young man, whether poor or rich." This is more reputation building. What's happening? She gets here, and the first thing she asks is, "Can I go out and glean the fields?" "Yes, you can go glean the fields." Then she has been so kind to Naomi. And people, Naomi no doubt, had told people all the things Ruth had done for her. This had come back to Boaz. So he had watched her. He'd watched her work ethic. He had watched her heart. And now he says, "What doing this for me shows me something else. Instead of going after some young buck who would be much more handsome than me and help you in other ways, you've come to help me out because I'm your oldest relative." And he says to her, "Your kindness that you have shown to be better than that of the first after not going after young men." This is in verse 10. In verse 11, "And now, my daughter, do not fear, for I will do whatever you ask, for all the people in the city know that you are a woman of excellence." Now, let that soak in for just a minute. All the people of the city know you're a woman of excellence. She's a young widow woman who has no money. She comes from a foreign country. She didn't know a living soul in that city, in the city of Bethlehem, except Naomi. But all of a sudden, he says, everybody in the city knows your reputation. How could that be? Your reputation is far, far bigger than you are. It will go places you have never been. It will get there before you get there, and it will be there a long time after you're gone. Her reputation had already permeated the city of Bethlehem. They knew that she was a woman of excellence, and this was yet another manifestation of that. So he tells her, "I don't know, I don't believe that I'm the closest relative to you. I believe that there's one other." So he has to go check this out. So he says, "You lay back down and I'll do what I need to do." And he inquires and he finds out, and you're going to learn a little bit about Jewish history in chapter 4. He finds out there is in fact a man who is closer to them than he is, closer to Naomi. So he now has to give this man the opportunity to redeem this. But he makes a shrewd deal, and that is, "I'm going to make this be a package deal. You have to buy Naomi's property and be able to financially take care of Naomi and Ruth." Now, the closest of kin says, "I can't afford that. It would ruin me." So he passes. In chapter 4, verse 1, Boaz went up to the gate and sat there, and behold, the closest relative of whom Boaz had spoken was passing by. And he said, "Turn aside, friend, and sit down here." And he turned aside and sat down. And he took 10 men of the elders of the city. "Sit down here." So he has now the older people to let them sort of be the jury. In verse 3, he said to the closest relative, "Naomi has come back from the land of Moab, has to sell the piece of land which belongs to our brother Elimelech." He wanted to inform him in verse 4 that this is going to be happening. In verse 5, the latter part of verse 4, he says, "If you can't redeem it, I'm going to redeem it. I'm telling you right now." Verse 5, Boaz says, "On the day you buy the field from the hand of Naomi, you must also acquire Ruth the Moabite, the widow of the deceased, in order to raise up the name of the deceased to her inheritance. I want to tell you a little bit about Jewish history and Jewish law. And I want you to think about Solomon in this case. I have, here's the husband, and I have a wife. And I give her, I'm going to give her a certain amount of endowment. If I take a second wife, I must be willing to give wife number two everything I gave wife number one. If I take wife number three, I have to give wife number three everything that I gave wife number two and wife number one. I'll drive a peg in that. Anybody remember how many wives Solomon had? 700. 700. David had 13. Bathsheba was his 13th. So what's happening is, to the closest of kin, number one, you're going to have to be able to buy her field, and you're going to have to be able to give her, your second wife here, as much money and much of everything as you're giving the first wife. Now he says this, verse 6, this is chapter 4 and verse 6. And the closest relative said, I cannot redeem it for myself, lest I jeopardize my own inheritance. Redeem it for yourself, that you may have my right of redemption, for I cannot redeem it. I'm going to venture to guess that's exactly what Boaz had planned. This also is part of a big picture up here. Now, I'm going to tell you why in just a minute. Just like a 17-year-old boy named Joseph who becomes the most powerful person, second most powerful in the world. Just like a young slave girl named Esther who becomes the wife of the king, the most powerful man in the world. You're going to see another story like that in just a few minutes. So in verse 6, the number two guy, the number one guy, I should say, passes. I can't do it. Now, there's an interesting thing I want you to look at. Verse 7. This was the custom in former times in Israel concerning the redemption of the exchange of land to confirm any matter. A man would remove his sandal and gave it to another. And this was the manner of attestation in Israel. This was the proof. They didn't have a courthouse necessarily. They didn't have the ability to get a notary public. And so, to make certain that this was a deal, the closest of kin had to take off his sandal and give it to Boaz. Some interesting customs. In the time of Moses, when you made a vow, you swore something, you had to grab the inside of your thigh and hold your thigh, and that's when you made an oath or a vow. So in verse 8, the closest relative said to Boaz, buy it yourself. And he removed his sandal. And Boaz said to the elders and the people, you are witness today that I have bought from the hand of Naomi all that belonged to Elimelech. She didn't have any money, so he was going to take care of her. And all that belonged to Chilion and Mahlon. So whatever was hers and whatever were her children's. In verse 8, and all of the people who were in the court and the elders said, we are witnesses. May the Lord make the woman who is coming into your house like Rachel and Leah. That's interesting. So Rachel and Leah were the two wives of Jacob. And there's a lot of story there, but because of time, I'm not going to go into it. But he says to Boaz, I hope that this young woman that you've picked up, who is known as a woman of excellence, becomes like Rachel and Leah were for Jacob. Both of whom built the house of Israel, and may you achieve wealth in Ephraim and become famous in Bethlehem. Moreover, may your house be like the house of Perez and Tamar who bore Judah. You can read about that in the latter part of the book of Genesis. Through the offspring which the Lord shall give you by this young woman. He's an old man. But he's going to start a whole new lineage now with this young woman. You'll see that. So Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife. And he went into her, and the Lord enabled her to conceive, and she gave birth to a son. You have another phrase that indicates providence. The Lord opened her or enabled her to conceive, and she gave birth to a son. Then the women said to Naomi, Let's go back to Naomi now. What happened to her? She was widowed. She lost both of her sons. She looked so bad when she came back into Jerusalem. People are saying, "Is that you, Naomi?" And Naomi said, "The Lord has been hard on me. His hand has been hard on me. He's judged me hard in my life." In verse 14, the woman said to Naomi, "Blessed be the Lord who has not left you without a redeemer, without a lineage, without people in your descendancy." So she had no living relatives. My father, just to give you a quick side note, our time is about up. My father had four children, three of them are girls. I was the lineage. I was the namesake. When my first child was a boy, my dad was the happiest person in the world because his bloodline, his lineage was going to go another generation. Now, Shelby has not had a son, so his bloodline will end there. But that was very important to the Jewish people, to the Hebrew people. And so the women now are saying, "God is going to give you a son. We just know He's going to give you a son, and your bloodline is going to continue." So in verse 15, "May it also be that a restorer of life and a sustainer in your old age for your daughter-in-law who loves you and is better to you than seven sons has given birth to him." She gave birth to a little boy. "When Naomi," verse 16, "took the child and laid him in her lap, and she became his nurse." Now you've seen this several other times in other stories. And so Naomi now, who never believed she was going to have another child, she never believed that she could have any more offspring, in her old age, through the providence of God, is given a son that is now being a grandson of sorts, laid in her lap. Now, how did she become blood kin to Naomi? Because Ruth was a Moabite. Boaz. Boaz was the closest relative of her former husband. In verse 16, "Naomi took the child and laid it in her lap, and she became a nurse. And the neighbor women gave him the name, 'A son has been born to Naomi.' And they named him Obed. He is the father of Jesse, the father of David." And you can see at the lineage after that. Now I want to just tell you this. Here is what you have happen after this is David's family becomes the lineage of kings all the way to Jesus Christ. We're going to look in Matthew chapter 1. How in heaven's name, I'm going to back up and make this point. How did a woman who was a prostitute, a harlot by the name of Rahab, who lived in a Midianite city named Jericho, how in the world did Rahab become part of the lineage of Jesus Christ? Because of her faith. Because of her faith. When she was willing to risk her life to save these two spies. And when the soldiers came in, she said, they went that way. And she sent them out another way. And they said to her, what's going to happen is, when we come back, you need to have a red cord hanging out your window. And we will see that cord. And we promise you that if you have that cord there, we will rescue you and all of your family. And we remember that story. She immediately went out and put a red cord down. She didn't know if it was going to happen that afternoon or a year later. But because of that, Rahab became part of the lineage of Jesus Christ. She was not a Hebrew woman. Now we have a Moabite woman. What in the world happened to make this young, widowed Moabite woman who had no money, she had no friends, she went into a land that she didn't know anybody, and she eventually becomes the lineage of all of the kings of the nation of Israel, and eventually becomes part of the lineage of Jesus Christ? How did that happen? Truth is stranger than fiction. This is providence. God rewarding people. Where did it start, to summarize? Just be turning to Matthew chapter 1 for just a second. In Matthew chapter 1, I'm telling you that the two women in the lineage of Jesus Christ that were not Hebrew women had fabulous stories. And that's how they got there. I want you to look with me in Matthew chapter 1, Abraham, verse 2. This is Matthew 1 and 2. Abraham was born Isaac, Jacob, and you can see that. In verse 4, to Ram, Aminadab, and Aminadab, Nashon, Salmon. To Salmon was born Boaz by Rahab, because she wouldn't have shown up in any lineage. And to Boaz was born Obed by Ruth. These are two women that you could have searched the Hebrew chronology as far back, and they're not going to show up because they're not Hebrew women. To Ruth, Obed by Ruth, and to Obed Jesse, and to Jesse was born King David. Ruth was David's grandmother. She was Solomon's great-grandmother. The providence of God. Thank you for listening to me. This all started quite simply with a young woman who had a great work ethic, who had a big heart, who was willing to put other people ahead of her, and her reputation spread very quickly. And I'm going to tell you this. There is never, ever, ever a place where someone who has strong work ethic and a strong integrity will not do well. God could drop us, or you and I could drop out of a helicopter in the middle of nowhere, and you have the fundamental heart of this woman, and you're going to do just fine. And God rewarded her and Naomi for their actions. We have a song that we're going to be led in this evening that will be our song of encouragement for the day. I would tell you, some of these lessons I do for your benefit, but I also do to put them on the website. And from time to time, when I'm visiting with people, and someone comes to me and they're depressed, and they're just tremendously downtrodden, and they don't know what's going to happen to them, I can say, there's a lesson on the website that you need to listen to. And this is one of those lessons. It's a lesson that young people ought to learn. You develop a bad reputation by the time you're 14, 15, 16, 18 years of age. There will be doors closed to you in your life that you have no clue about. Or doors can be opened to you. If you need to make response in any way, let it be known as we stand together and sing number 326.